to just put yourself to where we are left today is starting the first king, the creation of the kingdoms, the north kingdom, the Israel, and Judah, the southern kingdom. And much of the story is focused on the northern kingdom. And we've seen things go from bad to worse as far as the leadership of the kings in the northern kingdom. We started out with Jeroboam, and things have gone downhill, and now we're down to King Ahab, infamous King Ahab, and his also infamous wife Jezebel. And the last two lessons we've been focusing on some of the early interactions between the prophet Elijah and Ahab. And chapter 17 we looked at was a time of building up for Elijah. Different things were happening in Elijah's life. He was miraculously taken care of. He was sent out into the wilderness, and food and water were provided for him. Then he went with the widow, the widow with the son, who they were about to starve. But again, miraculously, the Lord provided food for both Elijah and the widow and her son. The son died. Elijah brought him back to life. And we see through this all of how influential prayer was in the life of Elijah. He was clearly a man of prayer. And then last week in chapter 18, we saw Elijah probably, if you think of Elijah, this is certainly one of the highlights when you remember Elijah, is his challenge, so to speak, against the 450 prophets of Baal. You know, they set up this, Elijah set up this situation there where the prophets of Baal were to come in and to call down fire upon the sacrifice that they had prepared from their God, from Baal. And this went on all day and nothing happened. And then Elijah had his turn. So Elijah set up his offering to the Lord. And just to make it even more challenging, so to speak, he had 12 barrels of water poured on the sacrifice. And then he prayed to God, and God sent down a great consuming fire that consumed the sacrifice, consumed the altar, consumed everything around it, consumed his water that was in the trough. So again, a very visible display of God's power, and rewarding, I guess you would say, Elijah's faith in God, and it turned the people's heads back to God, at least temporarily. And the 450 prophets of Baal were slain. So that's kind of where we ended last time, and we pick up now in chapter 19. And it's interesting. You would think that based on chapter 18, that Elijah's faith was way up there. You know, what could discourage him at this point, after seeing God work so mightily, that the 450 prophets were defeated. But we'll start reading in chapter 19, and we'll see what happens to Elijah early on. Okay, 1 Kings chapter 19, verse 1. And Ahab told Jezebel all that Elijah had done, also how he had executed all the prophets with the sword. Then Jezebel
sent a message to Elijah saying, "So let the gods do to me, and more also, if I do not make your life as the life of one of them by tomorrow about this time." So Ahab goes back, tells his wife Jezebel everything that had happened there, and Jezebel makes this oath that she's going to see that Elijah is killed as a result of that. Now, what would be Elijah's reaction? Here's a guy who just wiped out 450 of the prophets of Baal. You would think his confidence, his faith would be at a very high point. But we read in verse 3, "And when he saw that, he arose and ran for his life, and went to Beersheba, which belongs to Judah, and left his servant there." So he took this threat seriously, and his reaction was he ran for his life. Now, again, you would think maybe this was a surprising reaction for a man who had just been built up in the faith so strongly, but nonetheless, this is what happened to him. He ran for his life. And, you know, when you look through many of these examples, on Wednesday nights we've been looking at some of the characters in the Old Testament, and remember, you may recall our look at Abraham. You know, when you think of Abraham, you think of a man of great faith, but when you look at his life and the things that happened in his life, his faith, it wasn't, you know, on this continuous upward slope. You know, it would go up, and then something would happen, and you would see him lose faith. Up, down, you know, it's kind of an up and down journey of faith with even Abraham. And I think we're seeing the same pattern here with Elijah. His faith is strong sometimes, and other times it's not as strong. And I won't ask for a show of hands, but anybody here had a similar experience with their faith? You know, do we see our own faith rise and fall? And, you know, as we see with Elijah here, even sometimes our faith falls after a great victory, you know, which is a really a sad commentary on people. It's not a sad commentary on God. You know, God is always where God is all the time. It's us that move away from God, and we feel our faith becomes less than it should at some times. So, we see these examples. Sometimes it's easy to say, "Man, why did he do that?" Well, you know, why did he do that? Why do we do what we do? And you know, it's all part of our human nature and our I guess willingness maybe to step back from God when he is there all the time. But anyhow, let's continue on with Elijah here and see what happens. Verse 4, "But he himself went a day's journey into the wilderness." So he was afraid. He ran for a day into the wilderness, "and came and sat down under a broom tree. And he prayed that he might die and said, 'It is enough now, Lord, take my life, for I am no better than my father's.'" So here's a man of prayer actually praying that God would take his life. You can see how this threat from Jezebel affected him greatly. He was so discouraged that he thought, "Well, this is the end, you know, God, just do away with me." Verse 5, "Then as he lay and slept under a broom tree, suddenly an angel touched him and said to him, 'Arise and eat.' And he looked, and there by his head was a cake baked on coals and a jar of water. So he ate and drank and lay down again. And the angel of the Lord came back the second time and touched him and said, 'Arise and eat, because the journey is too great for you.' So he arose and ate and drank, and he went in the strength of that food 40 days and 40 nights as far as Horeb, the mountain of God." So here's God ministering to to Elijah. He's in the wilderness. He provides his food for him, and it's a pretty miraculous thing that the food and the water was provided for him, allowed him to travel for 40 days. And it's again, it's interesting when you see the destination. He went to Horeb, the mountain of God, and this would be Sinai, where the commandments were given to Moses. So you know, this is a great place he's going to, a place that has a great history. Certainly, Elijah would have known everything that had happened on Mount Sinai. But that is where the Lord had sent him. His 40 days ends up, and he is at Mount Sinai. Then we continue on with the story of what happened while he was there. And there he went into a cave and spent the night in that place. And behold, the word of the Lord came to him. And he said to him, Elijah, or he said, what are you doing here, Elijah? So he said, I have been very zealous for the Lord God of hosts, for the children of Israel have forsaken your covenant, torn down your altars, and killed your prophets with the sword. I alone am left, and they seek to take my life. So here's Elijah feeling, you can tell by that last phrase there, he alone is left. He's probably feeling a little bit sorry for himself at this point. He feels that he's been zealous for the Lord God, and he sees this apostasy all around him. The people in Israel are just turning away from God, forsaking covenants, and it's been a very bad time for the people of Israel. Verse 11, and this God was speaking here. Verse 11, then he said, go out and stand on the mountain before the Lord. And behold, the Lord passed by, and a great and strong wind tore into the mountain and broke the rock in pieces before the Lord. But the Lord was not in the wind. And after the wind, an earthquake. But the Lord was not in the earthquake. And after the earthquake, a fire, but the Lord was not in the fire. And after the fire, a still small voice. So it was when Elijah heard it that he wrapped his face into his mantle and went out and stood in the entrance of the cave. And suddenly a voice came to him and said, what are you doing here, Elijah? Well, we'll stop there just for a second. But we see there that the Lord, Elijah's seeing these great things happening outside, this great wind, this the various things, the rocks being broken into pieces, an earthquake, but the Lord is not in any of these great physical events that are happening outside. But the Lord comes in the end as a still small voice. And you know, when you think of how the Lord deals with people and with us, and you know, lots of people are looking for a big sign, you know, and you look through the history of the Israelites, you know, they were always looking for a big sign. Well, the Lord is showing Elijah here, showing us too, that you know, it's not always in the big things that the Lord is speaking. You know, if we become quiet and wait upon the Lord, He'll come in those times and speak to us. So I think this is a good illustration of how we're to approach God. We're supposed to approach God in reverence and in prayer, and just wait on Him to come to us. And as he will do in these times. And again, the world is looking for big things, big events, which would reveal God, but these big events don't always happen, particularly to individual believers. And maybe I'll stop there for a second to see if any brother has a thought or a comment before we continue on in this story. Any contributions this morning? Okay, well then let's continue. And So in verse 14, Elijah answers God. God asks the question, what are you doing here, Elijah? Verse 14, so he said, I have been very zealous for the Lord God of hosts, because the children of Israel have forsaken your covenant, torn down your altars, and killed your prophets with the sword. I alone am left, and they seek to take my life. So essentially, that's the same answer Elijah gave in verse 10. And the Lord said to him, go return on your way to the wilderness of Damascus, and when you arrive, anoint Hazael as king over Syria. Also, you shall anoint Jehu, the son of Nimshi, as king over Israel, and Elisha, the son of Shaphath of Abel-Meholah, you shall anoint as prophet in your place. So he's telling him, go back and anoint these various people. The reason comes in verse 17. It shall be that whoever escapes the sword of Hazael, Jehu will kill, and whoever escapes from the sword of Jehu, Elisha will kill. Now here's in verse 18. Elijah has been complaining or has been noting that he's the only one left, a faithful one in all of Israel. Verse 18, God's answering that charge or that assertion. Verse 18, yet I have reserved 7,000 in Israel, all whose knees have not bowed to Baal, and every mouth that has not kissed him. So there's Elijah thinking, he's the only one left, and there's the Lord telling him, no, you aren't the only one left. There's 7,000 in Israel that are that have not turned to Baal and have not kissed his mouth. So again, another illustration, have you felt like you're ever the only one? I was just sitting there the other day at work in a meeting, just kind of looking around the room. I said, boy, I bet you I'm the only believer in this room. Well, maybe I was, maybe I wasn't. There weren't 7,000 other in that particular room, but I think all of us have had those experiences, particularly when we see different things going on in the world, some pretty horrible things. This last week has been another bad week. The week before that was bad, and something bad will come out next week. I don't think the answer is, we shouldn't become depressed, concerned over that. We aren't the only one. God is still in control. And there are a lot of others out there, believers, that are like you and I, that are praying for things in this world. And we're seeing the answers to our prayers also. But, just don't feel like, what's the expression? Don't feel like the Lone Ranger. There's others out there also. So I'll give an opportunity again, if any brother has a anything to add to this, Brother Gil?
I think the theme here and the thing that strikes me so much is that they're trying to emphasize, who do we listen to? If Elijah had only had faith that he did have and listened to the Lord instead of the threat from Jezebel, it would have been so much different. But we are very much the same way. We look at the circumstances that surround us rather than to the Lord, really in control.
Yeah, that is a good point. Who did Elijah listen to there? It was Jezebel's threat, and not what the Lord had told him. So all right, and to finish up, thank you, Gil, and to finish up chapter 19, the succession planning, if you will, is in the works here. There will be a successor to Elijah, and that successor is Elisha, and we will we'll see how that starts out. Verse 19, so he, and we're talking now about Elijah, so he departed from there and found Elisha, the son of Shaphath, who was plowing with 12 yoke of oxen before him, and he was with the 12th. So we see, you know, this Elisha was probably a man of wealth. There were 12 yoke of oxen there, and he was with one of them, and presumably his servants were operating the other 11. Then Elisha passed by him and threw his mantle on him. And he left the oxen and ran after Elijah and said, "Please let me kiss my father and my mother, and then I will follow you." And he said to him, "Go back again, for what have I done to you?" So Elisha asked for time to go back and visit his parents before he goes on this journey with Elijah. 21, so Elisha turned back from him and took a yoke of oxen and slaughtered them and boiled their flesh using the oxen's equipment and gave it to the people, and they ate. Then he arose and followed Elijah and served him. So there we see the mantle being passed to Elisha. He asked for time to go back and say goodbye to all his family. You contrast that with what happened in the parable in the New Testament. The fellow wants to go back and say goodbye to his family. Kind of, what's the difference here? Well, in the New Testament, that was an excuse. I think he was just offering that as an excuse so he wouldn't follow the Lord. But in this instance, we see what happens. Elisha apparently does do what he asked to do, but then he comes back and he finishes up, and he is now apparently, from all all indications here, is fully committed to following on with Elijah. And so that's where we stand. Chapter 19 was a fairly short chapter to cover, but we see. Again, we see a kind of a setback for Elijah in his faith. He's afraid of what Jezebel has threatened. We see the Lord reminds him, builds him up once again, and then we see at the end there's been a plan for someone to succeed the prophet Elijah. So that's all we were going to cover today. And I know we're a couple minutes early, but that's probably okay. We'll give Mike a little extra time. And so that's it for today. And we'll turn back over to John for Jeff. Jeff has a comment while we're switching here.